Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
My name is Danielle Vogel, and you're listening to Everyday Enviro on Full Service Radio, a show about the little things you can do to minimize your personal carbon footprint. This show is all about empowering you to take control of the pace of environmental progress you're making just by being a little bit more mindful about the way you eat, drink, shop, think, and vote. This isn't hard stuff, but we'll show you just how easy it can be when you know exactly which small things really do matter. If fighting climate change is something that's important to you, or possibly just something you're curious to learn more about, please consider subscribing to Everyday Enviro, wherever you get your podcasts. Today, I'm joined by Craig Oster, Senior Director for Political Affairs at the League of Conservation Voters. Craig, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited to learn from you. So we're almost exactly 4 months away from the Iowa caucuses, and we're coming up on the fourth of a dozen Democratic debates in the run-up to the primaries. In each one so far, we've heard a bit about where the candidates stand on climate change, and we've even had one candidate forum that was entirely dedicated to global warming. Climate change is unmistakably a pivotal issue in next year's election. Praise be, at last. So over the next half hour, we're going to walk through the leading candidates' positions on climate so our listeners can feel confident that they know exactly where these folks stand on an issue of critical importance to all of us. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right. So let's actually walk through them alphabetically. I think that's the most logical. So we'll start at the top with Papa Joe Biden. Where is Joe Biden on climate change? Tell us everything.
Sure. So former Vice President Biden came out with a plan earlier in the year where he would commit to getting to 100% clean energy and net zero climate pollution no later than 2050. He's called, you know, to get back into the Paris Agreement, but go further. He's talked about investing $1.7 trillion in clean energy, putting a price on carbon, and getting rid of fossil fuel subsidies. So
this is sort of your classic mid-century solution, kind of yesteryear, it sounds like.
Well, I think, you know, we are encouraged by, you know, the not just his plan, but the fact that all of the candidates have such a strong plan. You know, there's some differences for sure in the target dates and the investments, but is just such a radical departure.
Certainly. So when you say he is interested in pricing carbon, is he solution agnostic or is he specifically talking about an outcome? Is he a cap and trade advocate? Is he, does he support the carbon tax?
You know, they've said he's supporting put a price on carbon.
Details forthcoming.
Yeah, I think, okay. He has put out some of the parts of his plan, his climate plan, and I think we're all looking to see sort of as the campaign goes on, are they, you know, building on that? Are they really leaning in?
Cool. And did you say 1.7 trillion?
Yes.
Is that a number that makes LCV happy or too low?
You know, I think it's not necessarily about just the amount, but it's, you know, what are we prioritizing with that money? What else are we doing at the same time? I think we're sort of at this point where we need to be firing on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just necessarily looking at, I think, the dollar amount that they're committing, but looking at what are all the actions that they're taking along with the investment.
Sure.
How are they leveraging that with private investment? I think Biden's plan says like that would leverage $3 trillion in private investment. And then also, I think the other thing to think about when we're talking about any of these plans is where does climate fall on their list of priorities?
Absolutely.
Compared to everything else.
Yeah.
So, and that is a little harder to measure, for sure, but I think that's something that's just as important as the policy details.
Yeah.
Because we've seen time and time again climate fall off the radar.
In fact, the last time he was elected, that is what happened. I was there and barely escaped alive. So for those of you who were not there, on the campaign trail, the Obama-Biden ticket sort of held up as dual priorities, climate change and healthcare. We know which one they got and which one we have not yet achieved. And really, like, a new administration needs to come out swinging on their top priority. And climate was not that for Obama-Biden.
Yeah, and I think that is what we're working hard to prevent a second time. Mm-hmm. And what LCV is really focused on is not just, it's great that these candidates have these plans, but now how are they campaigning every day on these plans, and how are they demonstrating to the voters that who are saying climate is a top priority, that it is also really, truly one of the top priorities for this next administration.
For sure. Has Biden gone on the record with regard to the Green New Deal yet? I mean, I know it's a bit of an amorphous concept still.
Yeah, he has expressed support for a Green New Deal. I feel like I think most of the candidates have. Again, a lot of them talk about, you know, looking at the details and filling that in.
Of which there are few. So
yeah, we see, you know, the Green New Deal is really like a call for proposals for how are we going to, you know, mobilize our country and really create the change we need to solve the climate crisis.
Heard. Okay. Let's move on to candidate number two, Senator Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey and former mayor of Newark. Where is Senator Booker on climate?
Well, I think one of the interesting things about how Senator Booker has been talking about climate has really been with an environmental justice lens. At the same time, you know, he's out there calling for 100% clean energy, calling for net zero carbon emissions by 2030.
Okay, so 20 years sooner.
Yeah. And, you know, he's been, I believe he's one of the co-sponsors of the Green New Deal resolution, and really has some, I think, really great ideas for kind of taking fossil fuel subsidies money and instead investing that into remediating environmental injustices and climate injustices.
That's interesting and couldn't be a more perfect segue to Mayor Pete. So Mayor Pete Buttigieg is the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. We all know that he's also a military veteran. He's taken a really specific climate position that I personally adamantly disagree with. Tell us about it.
I assume you're referring to his focus on a carbon tax.
Cap and dividend, specifically. Oh, yeah. Boo.
I mean, Mayor Buttigieg is coming at it from definitely a little bit of a different angle, but still also committed to 100% clean energy. He's laid out a 2035 goal, and he's also talked about getting to net zero carbon by no later than 2050. But his focus, as you said, has been on cap and dividend, along with a lot of the similar pieces that other folks are using, talking about Paris, ending fossil fuel subsidies, clean cars, but definitely a little bit different approach.
Can you tell our listeners what cap and dividend means?
So that is putting a price on the carbon pollution, and mm-hmm. then taking using the revenues and giving it back to taxpayers.
Yeah, so it's like a cartoonishly oversimplified version of cap and trade, whereby there is a limitation on carbon emissions, possibly sector or possibly economy wide, but probably just focusing on the energy generation sector. And then as the price of carbon increases, which theoretically should reduce the amount of carbon that's being put into the atmosphere, there is an open trading mechanism that generates revenue that he wants to send back to ratepayers. This was an idea that Senator Collins, Senator Cantwell were big fans of for some time. It is basically, you know, I like to say that climate change is one of the most complex problems facing humanity. It also requires a very nuanced solution. This bill, as originally drafted, was 25 pages. I know that, you know, is a simplistic argument, but it's too hard a problem to solve in 25 pages. And the fact of the matter is, like, the money that's raised through the carbon trading mechanism, like, desperately needs to be used and deployed to ease the transition to a carbon-constrained economy. And just sending checks back to ratepayers doesn't actually help evolve the industry that is going to be hardest hit by this. So ultimately, rates go up far more than the dividend would overcome.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's not the perfect solution.
It's not the perfect solution. But also, you know, he's from South Bend, Indiana, and Indiana is, last I checked, about 98% coal dependent. And so his constituency is extremely and reasonably concerned about rate increases as a result of carbon constraint. So it's not like entirely shocking that an elected from Indiana would be advocating a dispensation to ratepayers. But I think it's a pretty short-sighted view of the way we can achieve a longstanding and self-sufficient carbon-constrained economy. My two cents.
Yeah, I think we also need to sort of start reframing the problem as not just the cost of, you know, in terms of utility bills or anything, but the cost of inaction both to our economy and to people's lives.
Totally. All the externalized costs.
Yeah.
One of the many roots of the EJ argument. Okay, so moving through the alphabet, we've arrived at C. Julian Castro, the former Secretary of Housing. He was also the former mayor of San Antonio, Texas. Tell us where candidate Castro stands on climate.
Yeah, so Secretary Castro is also really putting forth a vision rooted in climate and environmental justice. His plan is called for 50% clean energy by 2030 and net zero carbon emissions by 2050. He has talked a lot again about, you know, rejoining Paris would be his first executive order, you know, and we're, you know, excited about that, but want to make sure everyone knows that that is just step one and we have so much more work to do. And I think he's put out a plan that really puts us on a good path.
You know, actually, we need to back this up one step further. We keep referring to the Paris Accord. I think everyone in America knows that that Trump withdrew us, which was not a super popular position among the environmental community. Can you give us like a 30-second background or primer on what is the Paris Accord and why is it important to reenlist?
Definitely. So the Paris Climate Accord was the work of, you know, many countries coming together during the Obama administration to really get every country on board with aiming to reduce global emissions so that we could keep in the to no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius global temperature increase, at which, you know, the IPCC with the
Intergovernmental Panel on climate change. This is the like UN outpost of climate scientists.
Right. So, yeah, which is as a result of the Paris Accord came out with the report last year that said we have 12 as of January 1st, 2018, we had 12 years to kind of mitigate against the worst disasters of climate change. So at this point, I think it's just the U.S. and maybe one other country that's not in the agreement. So it's really showing an incredible lack of global leadership that the U.S. once held, especially under the Obama administration. And of course, the U.S. is the second largest emitter of climate pollutants. So
behind who?
China.
Who is a signatory?
Right. And those behind us are India, which are also signatory. So it just having contributed so much to the problem, so much of needing to be part of the solution is also on us.
Mm-hmm. That was perfect. I have nothing to add. Yeah. Okay. Tell us about Senator Kamala Harris.
Well, so Senator Harris came out with a plan that really sort of draws on her background as a prosecutor and talks a lot about accountability. And she's has a record as attorney general, as district attorney, of going after polluters. So her plan calls for 100% carbon neutral electricity by 2030, as well as new vehicles being zero emission and getting to net zero greenhouse gases by 50% by 2030 and net zero by 2050.
Okay, so those numbers are similar to Julian Castro's, it looks like. So they're striving for a 2030 50% reduction and net zero by 2050
in overall emissions, but she did call for 100% clean electricity by 2030.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Taking notes. That's great. So that and probably Senator Booker's are the two most aggressive short-term targets.
I think
2030 is 10 years from now. That's pretty darn quick.
I think Senator Warren also adopted.
Oh, yeah, we haven't gotten to Warren yet. Hold on. Hold for the riveting conclusion of this process.
But so far.
Yeah. So far. Thank you for that. All right. So tell us about Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar's position on climate change.
So Senator Klobuchar's, her plan has called for 100% clean energy and net zero by 2050. You know, she would be open to some kind of a fee on carbon, also eliminate fossil fuel subsidies. You know, she's talked a lot about the, you know, kind of reinstating the Clean Power Plan, but going further. And that would be some of her first sort of actions and as the next president.
The Clean Power Plan was basically Obama's reaction to congressional stagnation on climate legislation. So it set in motion a whole new set of regulations for the building of new energy generation resources. Yeah.
Right. And it was at the time, the single biggest thing our country had ever done to try to...
Well, certainly we've not done something bigger since.
No. We'll talk about that later, but yeah. We've been going backwards.
Not good. Okay, so far we've covered Biden, Booker, Buttigieg, Castro, Harris, and Klobuchar. If you had to choose between those six, and you were singularly a climate change voter, who do you believe has the most stringent targets, and who do you believe is most actively prioritizing climate change?
That's a good question. I think there are elements of a lot of these plans that are really great, and there are, you know, pieces where some of them could be a little stronger. So I think that it is hard to say just one plan is mm-hmm. better than the others.
Certainly.
And then in terms of the prioritization, I think we see actually almost all of them really talking about climate pretty regularly and engaging around this issue. So, you know, I think, are we where we want to be with all of them saying,
right,
I'm going to do this?
They're not James.
Do everything immediately? Maybe not. But, you know, I think we're seeing really good progress on that front with all of them.
Okay. So we haven't found our like climate savior among this group necessarily, but we're pretty happy with where they stand, with my exception, of course.
Yeah.
I love him otherwise. It's so frustrating. Okay. So we're talking with Craig Oster of the Legal Conservation Voters about the Democratic presidential candidates' positions on climate change. We're going to take a short break, and when we get back, we'll talk through the rest of the roster. Back in a sec. Welcome back. This is Everyday Enviro, a show about the small things you can do to reduce your personal carbon footprint. I'm Danielle Vogel, founder of Glens Garden Market, and I'm joined today by Craig Oster, Senior Director for Political Affairs at the League of Conservation Voters. We've been talking about where the Democratic presidential candidates stand on climate policy, and we've got a few more to go. So let's take it down to Texas, my friend. Tell us about Beto O'Rourke.
Definitely. So former Congressman O'Rourke has talked also about how do we get to net zero carbon emissions by 2050, and he's talked about getting to 100% renewable energy as part of a Green New Deal, and he wants to, he said that within his first 100 days he would, you know, make, work with Congress to put in place, you know, some of these new standards.
Okay, so first, that's the first time we've heard about a first 100 days commitment. So far.
Yeah, I mean, I might not have mentioned it. I think, you know, Senator Klobuchar has also talked about
okay.
first 100 days. A lot of them have talked, actually, about what would they, you know, some of them have said, like, you know, first executive order on day one,
mm-hmm.
Paris. So actually, I would say a lot of them
That's sort of, like, common. to not, this group.
Yeah, I think it's built into a lot of them. Okay, now, that's a now good, we have well, to hold them accountable to do it.
Yes, sir, indeed. All right, the Honorable Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont.
Yes, so Senator Sanders came out with his vision of a Green New Deal. That was kind of the name of his climate plan. And he has 100% clean energy in the electricity and transportation sector by 2030 and complete decarbonization by 2050, and including net zero. And that is sort of, you know, kind of he talks a lot about, you know, limiting the power of the and influence of the fossil fuel industry, which is sort of one of the more kind of he really leans into that angle, I would say.
When he's talking about a carbon-free economy, is he talking about all sectors, or are we just talking about electricity? Is he reining in agriculture, transportation?
Well, so they use the term complete decarbonization by 2050.
That's what triggered the question.
Yeah, I think that I would have to go back and look at it closer, but I think they are looking at economy-wide.
That would be revolutionary.
Yeah, well, so LCV has been calling for, you know, 100% clean energy economy-wide,
right,
and net zero car emissions across the economy by 2050.
So, but you're not, like, shutting down U.S. agriculture, right? So are there other ways that you're reducing emissions that still allow some polluters to pollute? How do you achieve net zero in a, like, carbon, only partially carbon-constrained economy?
Well, I think agriculture definitely has to be part of the solution. There's a lot of natural carbon sequestration that can happen, mm-hmm, through regenerative agriculture,
certainly,
for example. So I think what we are really working through still is, you know, what are all the different tools at the disposal that need to happen? And I think there is a real recognition and drive that, like, pollution is happening in communities and right now, and that needs to be addressed, and people have a right to clean air and water. So as we're making this transition away from fossil fuels, we have to invest in helping communities now.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the solutions are, you know, there's probably in the short term, there's still going to be some pollution, but we have to not kind of gloss over what that impact is and really, you know, make sure communities have the resources benefit from this change. So,
got it. So would polluters be responsible for offsetting their own emissions? So, you know, even if we went to all electric cars, for instance, they're still sucking electrons off of a coal-based grid at the moment. So would the transportation emissions have to sequester themselves? Meaning, would polluters within the transportation sector be responsible for offsetting all transportation-related emissions? Or are you looking at sort of like cross-sector sequestration?
You know, that is probably beyond what I know personally. But I do think that what we're looking at is, in any scenario, like, making sure polluters are bearing the burdens of, mm-hmm, the pollution.
That's
so,
a good way to look at it. Yeah. Cool. All right. So I'm going to throw you a mini curveball,
sure,
and ask about Tom Steyer.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because I think he's going to make it all the way, but because he has put climate change sort of at the bedrock of his campaign. So what does Tom Steyer think about climate change, and what is his proposed solution?
Sure. Senator, Tom Steyer came out early on with his climate plan right after he announced, that was sort of very much based in, you know, kind of environmental justice and climate justice solutions, and offers, you know, some strong, you know, strong investments to get us also to, you know, 100% clean energy, mm-hmm, and carbon neutral. So, you know, I think he's clearly dedicated a lot of his
time and effort,
yeah, you know, before this campaign to working on the climate crisis, and I think that really came through in,
cool,
his plan.
I was at the Youth Climate March of maybe a few weeks ago at this point, and he was not only front and center, he was front and center with a bullhorn.
That's not surprising.
He was the only candidate I saw there. All right, so let's conclude this cavalcade of stars with perhaps the starriest of all, Elizabeth Warren. Tell us about where Senator Warren stands on climate change.
So, you know, Senator Warren has taken this approach that climate is part of almost every other plan that she puts out. So whether it was her plan for manufacturing, her plan for public lands, She recently came out with her 100% clean energy, clean electricity by 2030 plan that was, you know, as she said, largely adopted from Governor Jay Inslee, who, mm-hmm. you know, I think we have to just take a moment to give him
Please.
A huge shout out
Bow
for,
our heads.
Yes, the
RIP Kennedy Inslee.
The incredible work he did to elevate climate in this election, that the incredible work he's done in Washington State, but, you know, the hundreds of pages of climate policy that he put out as a presidential candidate that, you know, is really like kind of a guide for everyone else and for what we want to do. And we've seen folks like Senator Warren openly adopting pieces of his plan, which we think is great. Other candidates like Senator Harris is, you know, says she always says, I steal his line that, you know, the president says wind turbines cause cancer, but they actually cause jobs. So, you know, Senator Warren, I think, has, and she started to kind of put those pieces together on her website, too. And so, like I mentioned, the 100% clean power by 2030, she's also committed to, you know, a 50% a 50% target by 2030 and 100% net zero by 2050.
Cool. All right. So I have heard her say a couple times also that she's kind of like, I don't want to use the word co-op. It sounds a little bit negative, but she's adopting all of Inslee's climate positions. Inslee was probably the most climate progressive presidential candidate I have certainly ever seen. And so it gives me hope that there is a remaining candidate that is taking on the urgency of those positions.
Yeah, I think I've said this before, but I think that, you know, with Governor Inslee deciding to run for re-election again, there was this opening to sort of for other candidates to sort of step up and
be the climate champion.
Yeah, and not just like we were talking about, not just with the policies, but with the prioritization and like, you know, how are we gonna, who is gonna really make this the priority starting day one, and not just the first 100 days, but literally like every
it's
day.
It's gonna take a minute. It's gonna take a minute to build the coalition we need to move forward on this stuff. All right. So no walk through the current candidates would be complete without dissecting the climate heroism of the sitting president of the United States of America, your climate champion and mine, Donald Trump. Can you tell us where he is on climate change?
Well, you know,
is climate change a thing?
You know, he's said it's a Chinese hoax, but we're pretty sure he's seen some polls that have shown that that's not popular opinion for him to have. So he's also tried to say he's, you know, that he's the president that's given us the cleanest air and cleanest water, when even his own EPA, which, you know, he's tried to gut from the inside out, will say that actually no, air quality, water quality has gone down, emissions have gone up. You know, he's rolled back over 80 different environmental protections. He pulled out of Paris, as we talked about. They rolled back the Clean Power Plan, and there's just so many example after example that, you know, him saying that he's the most pro-environment president we've ever had is laughable, when the facts are that he's the most anti-environmental president. And, you know, I think this is just something that he's going to be really vulnerable on in this election, and I think he's starting to realize that, because as people feel the impacts of climate change, more and more Americans across party lines, and especially younger people, are demanding that the government takes serious action.
Yeah. So I am a devout, independent bipartisan. I've worked for members on both sides. I've worked in the House and the Senate. I am not approaching this from a partisan perspective. I do not have a partisan perspective to impart. But I am a very, very climate-motivated voter. It is my single issue. And if that is true of anyone else that's listening, you have to think long and hard about the possibility of voting for Donald Trump if you care about climate. He is the wrong candidate for you.
Yes. I mean, there's no question that the actions that they've taken have, you know, set us back and really hurt people's lives in both the immediate and the long term. And, you know, whatever the other issues you're considering are, all of them are impacted by climate.
Heard.
And, you know,
we can't do much without clean air to breathe.
Right.
Okay. Anyways, Craig, this is a show about minimizing our personal carbon footprint. What are some things you do in your own life to reduce your environmental impact?
Sure. That's a great question. And I think that we do all play a part, even as like these are massive problems that require, you know, the full extent of government weighing in, but we all do have a part to play. I think reducing our, you know, our use of plastics, for example, like one simple thing is like I use a bamboo toothbrush instead of plastic toothbrush, because those things stick around for a really long time and wind up in our oceans, whereas you know, the bamboo toothbrush is sustainable
and renewable.
Yep. And so you know, when I try not to use I do try to use public transportation when I can, walking, you know, and then also like supporting candidates that share my values, and share environmental values, I think is really important. So that's why I work at LCV, and do this, some of the work I do.
Awesome. Do you remember the brand name of that bamboo toothbrush? I haven't heard of this before.
I don't, but you...
Right, when you broadcast this show out to all of your networks, can you put it in there?
Yes. I swear, though, if you Google bamboo toothbrush, I bet there's a bunch of different options.
Not
and you
a
can
crowded category.
Start to buy them. I saw them. I've seen them at CVS recently.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. Thank you for that pro tip. I did not know that was a thing. All right, team, climate change is real. It's happening right now, and human activity is making it worse. Every little bit counts. Keep finding little ways to minimize your personal carbon footprint. It really matters, and it's urgently necessary. Thank you so much for being here today, Craig.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening to Everyday Enviro on Full Service Radio. If you like the show, please consider subscribing. And if you've got an idea for a show or a guest, or even a question about how you can reduce your personal carbon footprint, hit me up by email. I'm at glensmarket@gmail.com. And in any event, we'll catch you again next time on Everyday Enviro. Talk then. Bye, friends.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.